Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We have to be careful that we don't just live out lives on social media that don't reflect the life that we want to see in real life. So it's just making that connection between what we send out electronically and what we do in the real world.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated with me, Tanya Gooden, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Because we've all been.
This is a podcast about learning to live healthily and happily with technology and the digital world, and understanding why sometimes it's so hard to do. Because if we learn how to step away from our phones more, we'll be learning how to step in more to our lives, improving our relationships, our work, and our health.
Because we've all been swept away, yeah.
I'm your host, Tanya Gooden, author and founder of digital wellbeing movement Time to Log Off. Each week I'll be asking a new guest what they've learned about the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket, their smartphone.
One of the features of us all being stuck at home and locked down in the pandemic has been a huge surge online in political activism. And it's a subject I've really wanted to tackle since I've been planning this particular season of the podcast. Obviously, the biggest example is Black Lives Matter, the Black Lives Matter hashtag, and some of the campaigns on social media to support that. I wanted to find out a little bit more about how much that actually does good when we are, you know, retweeting, when we're posting hashtags. Are we just making ourselves feel good about it, or are we actually affecting any change in the world? So the person I'm speaking to today was absolutely perfect to talk to about this. Athena Cablenu is a stand-up comedian, writer, broadcaster. She's also the occasional co-host of the Guilty Feminist podcast, one of my all-time favourite podcasts. So today we're talking about clicktivism, which is exactly as I was just talking about, the kind of habit of clicking on or retweeting or using a hashtag to support a cause. Are we all doing it? Does it work? Should we be doing something else? We're also talking about comedy, her experience of being a stand-up in lockdown, the difference between what happens when you connect with people in a comedy club and when you connect with people online, and some tips from all of us on how to be better audiences. And we also had a little kind of segue off into celebrity culture online and what celebrities have been doing to keep us all entertained and to keep themselves visible. So very wide-ranging chat, but really fun. And actually, Athena had some really brilliant ideas on how we can all be better activists online. I want to just say one thing about the quality of the recording. So I haven't been let down at all by technology in lockdown. We've had some really seamless recordings, but this one had a load of tech gremlins right from the start. We unfortunately had to end up recording on a different platform to the platform I normally use. The sound quality is not quite as good. And in one part, there's a very annoying beep that repeats for a couple of minutes that was either on my side or Athena's side. So just a few apologies for that. Hopefully, I think you'll find the conversation so engrossing and Athena so interesting that you won't notice any of that. Hope you enjoy it. So Athena, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Welcome. I'm not going to explain to all the podcast listeners, but we've just had a bit of a nightmare. The first nightmare trying to get this recording set up.
Zencast has had enough of lockdown. This is what
I think.
We've all had enough. It stopped shielding. It just wants us to leave the house. it's had enough. So
what has your lockdown been like? Are you Zoomed out? The irony is that we're actually recording this on Zoom.
Am I zoomed out? I would say yes. I think that your schedule becomes a bit more demanding because people are like, oh, we'll do Zoom. But you can't do like 5 Zooms a day. You know, you wouldn't have 5 in-person meetings a day, right? And it is a little bit exhausting just doing... There's something really productive about going to a place and getting into a certain work mode because you're in that place.
Yeah.
If I've got to go to the BBC and do something, I'm in that kind of mode. And then if I've got to go to a theatre and do something, I'm in that kind of mode. And if I've got to go to a comedy club and do something, I'm in the comedy club mode. But when everything's happening in the same chair, on the same desk, on the same table, it can sometimes feel a bit disorientating, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting on with it. Without Zoom, we would have, someone like me especially, wouldn't have any work. So I'm grateful.
So you're a really social person, aren't you? You're an extrovert, I'm guessing. So how have you coped generally with everything being done via a screen?
It's actually really interesting. I'm actually massively introverted.
Are you? Oh, I just made this huge assumption about you.
No, it's fine. I guess, like a lot of people, like I'm quite contradictory, you know, in the way I come across perhaps, but generally speaking, I've loved the fact I've not had to leave the house. You know, it's great because whilst on Zoom, because I've got quite a short attention span, you know, you can browse Twitter or you can do things that would be really impolite in like situations. Yeah. But I do like people. And I think because I'm really aware of like my shyness and my introversion, I try to make a real effort to kind of overcome that by saying yes to things and going out and being around people. Because otherwise, you know, if you're not careful, you can just end up spending your whole life in your living room watching Netflix. So in one way, Zoom's been good because it's meant that I haven't just locked myself in the attic. But at the same time, I have enjoyed not feeling that pressure to leave my house every day, which is then generally what you do as a stand-up. You're very rarely home, especially in the evenings.
Yeah. I've been thinking a lot about that whole kind of performance aspect that's missing from lockdown, because one of the things I do is I give talks. And I did a webinar for a whole load of teenage boys a few weeks ago, and I'm just staring at 140 black squares because you know they don't turn their cameras on, and I'm thinking I can't tell if my jokes are going down well, I can't tell if they're interesting. You know, normally I can read a room a bit, and I just thought before I was thinking about doing this podcast with you, that's for you, that's, you know, like this times 100. I mean, how is it different trying to do comedy via a screen than actually when you've got the audience in front of you?
It's not too different to your experience, actually. Like when you do any kind of performance in front of people, whether it's public speaking or even singing, you have a connection with your audience, and that is part of your performance, and you will respond to them. Comedy is probably most unique in the fact there's no fourth wall. So we will talk to people in the crowd, we will respond to things and things like that. And I think that's the biggest loss with online gigs, because people can obviously turn off their audio, turn off their visual, turn off the video, and bang, you've got a fourth wall. And so everything that made live stand-up so special and electric and unique is now being taken away. I mean, what I do for my gigs is I try and talk to people loads before I start my material, to let them know that, basically to bully them into keeping their cameras on and keeping their sound on, really. And it's, on the one hand, it's good because there's lots of people who were scared of comedy club before who can now access stand-up because all the things that maybe they didn't like, oh, brilliant, they can watch a comedian and not be spoken to, or they can watch a comedian and not worry about having to be around crowds, for example, things like that. But that's not necessarily great for the performers, in which, you know, the art is all about responding to people. And the worst thing is not hearing people laugh. That's the worst thing. So I think people, as a minimum, please turn your audio on, because at the end of the day, you can watch Netflix. If you just want to watch just that, if you just want to watch comedy, you can watch so much comedy on TV now. Like, but in order to engage with someone who's performing live for you, you know, we do need to hear your laughter. And our performance is punctuated by laughter. My rhythm comes from hearing a response to what I've said. So if I don't hear that laughter, I'm missing a vital element of my actual script almost. So yeah, if you watch live stand-up, if you listen to this, please, please do not mute your audio. We want to hear your laughter, otherwise it's kind of miserable for us.
I think the problem is for a lot of Zoom for Business, everyone's been told mute your audio, you know, switch off your video, so that everyone's in that kind of mode. It's exactly what you just said a few minutes ago, that it's blurred the lines between work and play, that actually, you know, if you're watching a performance, you need to think about the fact that the performer wants to see you and wants to get your reaction.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, there are people who've got barking dogs in the background, police sirens, God knows what else going on in their house. So, you know, within reason, like, if you know something's happening that we can hear, that's going to interrupt the show, by all means, mute your mic. But generally speaking, particularly for stand-up comedy, like, the whole crack of it is we're recreating a live stand-up environment virtually. So yeah, there are things that we need. And, yeah, your laughter is one of the things we definitely need. Yeah.
So you're doing live stand-up at the moment on Zoom?
Yeah. Did a show yesterday. I have a show tonight. And it's, you know, I think as lockdown progressed, people got better at running such shows, which is a good thing, obviously.
Yeah. What can we all do to support live comedy, though? I mean, because, you know, I've been seeing lots of stuff about venues closing, and, you know, how can we make sure those venues don't close and that we still have comedy venues to go back to when this has all happened?
The depressing thing is not much, unfortunately. It's basically very simple. It's happened not just to comedy, but lots of businesses. We're not making any money, because we're not putting on any shows. So if you did go to watch comedy before, what I would do is just do a little search for your favourite venue and see if they've got a GoFundMe or some kind of fundraising thing. Because at the moment, they're not functioning. They're not earning money off tickets. They're not selling booze. They're not selling food. You know, they're not selling whatever it is comedy clubs sell. So they're not selling their pizzas or whatever. So, you know, there's I'm aware that some venues have GoFundMes and are crowdfunding for support. Government support is going to be really hard to assign to stand-up clubs because they're so weird. Like, you know, how can I put this? Some stand-up clubs are basically one guy who just puts on stuff in a pub, you know, and then some stand-up clubs are things like a comedy store, and it's like, and then there's lots of things in between. There's people that run clubs once a month on a Saturday. There's people that put on comedy shows in leisure centres every other Tuesday. You know, like, it's, these are going to be really hard people to fund adequately. So very challenging. Unfortunately, all you can do is find your favourite venue and donate to them. And also find your favourite comedians and watch them. Like, I did a show yesterday and I was, you know, it was a really great turnout and stuff like that really helps. So just to find your favourite comedians, find your favourite venues and support with your money. Open your wallets. I wish I had better advice, but I don't.
No. But actually, that point of going and finding the venue or the comedian that you like and seeing if there's a way of supporting, that's a really good tip, actually, instead of us all sitting here thinking, what could we do, and doing nothing. Mm. So I want to ask you a bit more about your use of tech generally, and, you know, maybe specifically in lockdown. I think I heard a podcast the other day where you said you more or less live on Twitter. So tell me about your use of Twitter.
I really enjoy it, actually, and it's become part of my writing process. So I punctuate my day with visits to Twitter, and it makes me happy, angry and sad in equal measure. And it suits the way my brain works. Like I said, short attention span. You know, I'm a comedian, so Twitter's great for comedians because it's like short, snappy, funny. I'm very interested in politics and culture and certain things like that. So it's a great way for me to provide commentary or see what other people are saying. So it ticks a lot of boxes for me in terms of my intellectual and more frivolous needs, which is terrible because that means I have lots of reasons to be on it when I shouldn't be doing it. I should be working.
And have you used it more, do you think, in lockdown?
Massively so, yeah. No. One of the things I commented on early on in lockdown was that I used to charge my phone in the morning, do my business, conduct my business, come back in the evening, and my phone will have charge. now I charge my phone like twice a day. Like, it's I can assure you, it's not that I've got a OnePlus. They are amazing phones. It is not the battery life. It is me being on my phone more. Yeah, phenomenally. Again, if I'm in a face-to-face meeting with you, I'm not going to be on my phone.
No
way. But on Zoom, if I'm in a three-hour writer's room on Zoom, I'm going to be on my phone, mate. So it's that opportunity to use it has increased, and I've taken the opportunity, sadly.
So you just mentioned that you're very interested in politics, and we actually met on a radio programme, the GD Love Show, was it last weekend or weekend before?
Yeah. A day at some point in the near past.
Yes. And in the midst of that show, you were talking about clicktivism, which I'm really embarrassed to say I'd never heard that expression before. And obviously I then went off and kind of looked into it. Explain clicktivism, because I think it's, you know, in terms of using Twitter and, you know, being politically aware, I think it's a really interesting phenomenon that seems to be happening a lot at the moment online.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to show a kind of support of a cause or a belief or a person performatively than in real life. And clicktivism is fundamentally a performative exhibition of support for something. So it's like, I saw this, isn't it awful? And then, but you don't do anything. You wouldn't, like I said, you wouldn't open your wallet and find a GoFundMe. You wouldn't maybe buy a book or start to read more about something, or, you know, maybe you wouldn't talk to someone in real life and maybe address problematic behavior that you see in real life. It's just, oh, I've sent this message out now, then that's my job done. And you mentioned this on the radio show too, and it's such a good point that these websites, particularly like Twitter and Instagram, they are very gratifying to use. So not only do you get the gratification of thinking I'm one of the good people, you get the gratification of having a like or a retweet or any kind of share. So that then bolsters the idea that you are a force for good rather than something more nefarious. And by the way, clicktivism isn't, I don't think, a bad thing. I think public support for certain opinions and amplification of good ideas and good positions is good, but that doesn't change the world. And you know, I've never seen in my life so much support for change and societal progression as I've seen on social media. But then I walk out of my house and it's still the same society.
Well, nothing's happening.
So yeah. that kind of fundamentally sums up clicktivism in a nutshell. We've got to be really careful. And I fall foul of this as well. You know, we have to be careful that we don't just live out lives on social media that don't reflect the life that we want to see in real life. So it's just making that connection between what we send out electronically and what we do in the real world.
And I'm just wondering if whether the hashtag culture really kind of exacerbates that. I mean, I was thinking about the, you know, Black Lives Matter hashtag that everybody leapt on, didn't they? And I think you're right, that was very performative. It was, I'm going to use this hashtag and I'm going to say that I support this, but yeah, where's the activism behind it?
Yeah, it's really, that's an interesting point actually, because I would say, one thing I would say about this particular wave of Black Lives Matter, because there was a wave a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I have seen more real world action.
This time?
Yes. Yeah. For example, a load of white people just knocked down Colston's statue. They were like, bum this, we've had enough.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, that statue, people had tried to get that statue down for decades. They'd gone through all kinds of official procedures, they'd filled in so much paperwork, had so many debates. It was very clear the majority of the population didn't want it. You know, that's structural racism protects racist structures, literally and figuratively, in the case of the statue. And I said, like, we've had enough. And they took it down in the most safe and health and safety conscious way I've ever seen. So, you know, and people say, well, that was just people, but officially the road statue in Oxford is coming down.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
BBC have committed, a few million. I mean, not unfortunately, but Black Lives Matter is about black people, and people have expanded the activism or the activity to include all non-white people. I don't object to this, but just to be clear, Black Lives Matter is a very specific thing that is specific to African and African descended people. However, it has lots of organisations are doing it. Lloyds and I think Green King are going to make certain investments in the form of reparations. So a lot of people are saying, oh, things haven't changed. I think overall things haven't changed, but I can pinpoint individual responses to Black Lives Matter where I can say I think people are recognising that they need to they need to at least try. And they do it. I'm a project manager, so I love things that are being done in a smart way, like specific, measurable, blah, 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 all that. Yeah. And that's what I look for when I look for people making these kind of gestures, like, is this measurable? Is it specific? Is it time bound and all these things? And some of these changes really are. So, you know, I don't want to give anyone a biscuit. I don't want to say, yeah, yeah, everything's fixed. But I like to be cool. I just like to see what's in front of my face. And I personally, as a writer and as a comedian, I have been, you know, it's a shame it took George Floyd's death to make it happen. But I've been given access to spaces I deserve to be in, but up till now I hadn't been. So, you know, will it continue? I don't know. But I will say there's been a response that has been bigger than the collectivism I've seen in the past.
So do you think social media's helped that then? Do you think the fact that, I mean, I know social media's been around for longer than, you know, 2 years ago when you say there was the kind of last wave of support. But do you think it's helped amplify it? Or do you think it's because we've all been in lockdown? What's, you know, made the difference?
Because we've been in lockdown, we've had time. And I don't know if this would have had the same impact if we weren't in lockdown. And that's the real shame. Also, with the George Floyd's death was actually, I would call it a trilogy of oppressive acts. So first of all, there was the Ahmaud Arbery death, who was a jogger in America, who was killed by just two white Americans. Then there was the, I forget her name now, but she was a woman who called the police on an African-American man.
Oh, the in the park, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She was walking her dog. He said, put the dog on a leash. And, you know, it wildly escalated to the point where she called the police. So there's a black man after me. And we were like, nah, not today, love. And then there was George Floyd there. So those three things happened in very close proximity to each other. So I think it was just like, in comedy, what's up called the rule of three. So when you tell a joke, you tend to have, you set up an expectation, you continue and then divert it. So you have rule of three. So generally when things happen in threes, the third time something happens, there's a reaction.
Yeah.
It's the way our brains are wired. And yeah, you know, you stand on someone's neck for 9 minutes, you're going to see some kind of change. Like 9 minutes is a long time. Lots of people have died on social media at the hands of the police. This isn't the first person I've seen die because of a police officer. And this isn't just an American thing. It happens, you know, it happens everywhere. I grew up watching people die on CCTV because of British police, you know. So it's not the first time it's happened, but the I think the perfect storm of lockdown, the fact those three things happened in close proximity to each other, and the fact that the murder was so grotesque, it woke people up in a way they hadn't been woken up before. Which is a good thing, but also regrettable, I think.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So I wonder what you think about this black and white challenge that's going around.
I
kind of think that's from, you know, from one extreme to another. I saw this challenge on Instagram and thought, everyone's posting these really arty black and white pictures, and I'm thinking, I don't even know what it's about. It's women empowering women, I think.
It's a really good example of collectivism. And my friends are doing this. Like I said, a friend, literally, I'm telling no lie, whilst we were trying to get tech running, I literally received a message to do it.
So you've been nominated.
Yeah, I've been nominated. And I've not been nominated up till now. And I was a bit upset I'd not been nominated. Look, I don't want to stop anybody from putting a picture up of themselves up on the internet and saying I'm beautiful. In fact, I advocate that behaviour. I love it. I love people saying, look at me, you know, aren't I nice? What's wrong with that? I have a daughter. I want her, when she grows up, to love herself so much that she's happy to share her physical and mental attributes to the world. That's, you know, this is what I aim for her and what I hope for her. But not in the name of activism. Not in the name of activism. Nothing will change. It means nothing. It doesn't empower me. It doesn't empower you. It doesn't empower anyone. It's not about womanhood. What is about womanhood is me putting pictures of other people. Like, these are people who inspire me.
Yeah.
But if you want to put a picture up of yourself where you look beautiful, then just say it. This is a picture of me and I'm beautiful. But if you say, this is a picture of me and I love women, so I will ask other women to do this, I kind of don't really see... It's a fad. And it's a, you know, it's like a TikTok dance challenge. Or I remember when we was planking. Do you remember the plank challenge?
Yes, I do.
That was the original ones where you had to like lie down in a dangerous place.
Yeah.
So it's just another challenge. You know, it's very cute, but it's a bit corny for me, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and it's really unclear why we're supposed to be doing it, because I read a little bit about it, and then someone posted that it was about women's rights in Turkey. That's where it came from. And I thought, well, it's been really diluted by the time it's got to me, because there's literally no mention of that, if that's the campaign.
I will research it, but I strongly suspect it has nothing to do with women's rights in Turkey. It's
because
suspect what's happened is it's just some generic women thing, and people are just attaching whatever to it. It's kind of like Chinese whispers or whatever. It's very odd. It's very sweet. Another thing as well is, as you know, we're both public figures. We're very used to putting pictures of ourselves up, because I'm always plastering my face on my social media to promote things I'm doing. So to be fair to my friends who aren't performers, it's, you know, they aren't typically posting up selfies of themselves or headshots and things like that. So I can understand why they would see that as a kind of rebellious act. But literally, if go onto my Instagram, it's me and my dinner. It's either my face or my dinner. So it always feels a little bit awful to just put up yet another picture of my mug. And I'm not even promoting anything. But, you know, it's, having said all of that, like, if it makes somebody happy to do that, fine. I just don't think it's a political act.
No. Don't kid yourself that you're changing the world.
Yes, exactly.
So talking about some of the things that people are doing on social media, I was wondering what your view was on celebrities who are getting increasingly frantic to make themselves visible during lockdown.
Yeah, sorry, carry on, I interrupted you there.
Well, Madonna's Quarantine Diaries, I think, for me, was, you know, kind of one of the classics. But there were lots of other examples, weren't there, of celebrities leaping up, saying, I'm still here, and not saying very much. So,
a lot of it's passed me by. I don't actually follow a lot of these big celebrities. So I will catch wind of what they do when, you know, if it's on, someone shared what they've done. So I wasn't aware of Madonna was doing Quarantine Diaries. I did see her make her adopted son David dance.
Oh yes, I saw that. Yeah.
And he fixed racism. He danced to Michael Jackson or something. Yeah. I thought that was pretty awful. Yeah, I didn't think that was good. I remember at the beginning, a load of celebrities sang Imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. Nothing will be. Who's that singer who put his dick in a packet of Pringles?
Oh God, I missed that. Was that Ollie Mass?
Nothing. That was a real, and that was the highlight of celebrity trying to be funny on the internet for me. What do I think of it? I think that we are all attention seekers, and we live in an industry which moves very quickly. And in order to stay relevant, people are desperately trying to maintain their audience, and people want to be spoken about, you know. And it's both sad and entertaining in equal measures, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it just, for me, it just showed the gap between a lot of, you know, I'm thinking a lot of the sort of West Coast celebrities, between their lifestyles and everybody else. You know, there was a lot of very kind of tone deaf posting of, well, you know, Madonna in her luxurious bath, surrounded by people filming her, when the rest, you know, everyone else was trapped at home without, you know, staff in the house or without, you know, acres of gardens.
Yeah, we have to stop putting celebrities in this place of, in this respectable place where it's like they do something above and beyond entertaining us. They're just entertainers. Madonna's a singer and a dancer. Like, that's all I expect of her. I don't want philosophy from her. I don't want her to make me feel good. You know, I don't want her to set up a website to tell me that I need to steam my vagina. I don't want any of this. And I think a lot of us, for some reason, we put celebrity in spaces they have no right to be in. And then they believe in that hype, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's unfortunate because it has led to a kind of dumbing down of ourselves, really. A lot of us are getting our education from celebrities on Instagram and Twitter now. It does, you know, specifically referring to Wiley, who is obviously, as we're recording this, doing what he's doing. You know, it takes us to quite dark places. So they are tone deaf. They are not people we should be watching for inspiration or life advice or, you know, any kind of mentoring. You know, they're entertainers. And as long as we keep that line very clear, you entertain us, but you know, that's it. I think that would help lots. They're all believing their own hype a little bit, which is a worry.
Yeah, the fact that all of them thinking that they could band together and sing Imagine and it would make everything okay, that was one of those moments, wasn't it?
The thing is, everything is okay for them.
Yeah.
They don't have to affect change. They can afford to be frivolous, but we can't. You know, I always said this about the Labour Party. Like, you know, I know a lot of people who I'm a former Labour supporter, and a lot of my friends became quote-unquote socialists. And I was like, you can afford to talk about socialism, because whether or not the Labour Party get into power or not, your life will still be fine, right? Yeah. Whilst you're doing this, whilst we're talking about things that people who, you know, we are not a socialist country or a right-wing country. Every general election we've had, we have voted against immigration. Do you know what I mean? We have voted against the public sector. So why you think you can change everything over 2 or 3 years? It's beyond me. But obviously, they could afford to take that gamble, because if they lost the gamble, it wouldn't be them that'd be suffering.
No? Champagne socialism, that's what we used to call it, didn't
we? Yeah, and it was it's a shame, because I didn't see any difference between the New Labour champagne socialism and the Jeremy Corbyn real ale socialism, we can call it, or whatever. And I just thought, everything you were saying is lovely. Like, I believe in all of it. It sounds great. I want to live in that country. However, most of this country won't buy it, because you're not going to change the politics of people. So it's super naive. But yeah, if you can afford to be naive, you'll just run around with those rose tinted glasses. And whilst other people who are left to suffer the consequences of those decisions don't get to do that. And the celebrities are doing the same thing. They get to flap about and, you know, live in a nice massive homes and mansions and live off income and residuals and royalties and all kinds of things, and the rest of us are left to kind of scrap around. So that's why I think, let them do what they do, but I can't take them seriously.
So do you ever kind of think, I mean, I know you've got a daughter and she's really young now, so you're not thinking about social media with her or phones, or, but do you ever worry about how she's going to use it as she grows up?
I worry about young people now and how they use it. So I certainly worry about how my daughter will use social media as she gets older. I worry about her access to content that she's too young to understand. I worry about her self-esteem. I worry about materialism, because a lot of social media content is basically look at me and buy what I'm wearing. Again, I'm not against anybody making a living out of doing that, but I also want to instill enough critical thought in my daughter to know when something isn't real. So I worry about all of that, and I don't know how I'm going to manage it yet. I'm going to try and just make sure she gets a phone as late in life as possible. I'm going to make sure she gets access to social media as late in life as possible, and in the meantime make sure she's aware of it and what the dangers are of it. And mostly I think I just really feel grateful I lived my childhood and teenage years without social media. Mm. So I want to give my daughter as much of that freedom as I can for as long as I can. But, you know, soon she's going to have friends, you're going to have peer pressure, she's got to want these things. And, you know, again, I don't want to deny her things that will give her access to opportunities. So I don't know if that's answered your question, but I will try and do the right thing. I hope I do, but I don't know.
I think it's all about being able to make mistakes in private, isn't it? That for me, when I think about my teenage years and the stuff that, you know, was never recorded anywhere, thank goodness. And, you know, they're not going to have that option, or increasingly it's difficult to have that option to make a mistake and it not be recorded by someone who's 5 feet away from you and uploaded to the internet.
Massively. I remember going to a bar in Leicester Square in London a few years ago now with somebody, and I don't go out often, mainly because I'm normally working in the evenings, and I certainly don't go to bars or clubs as often as I used to. So it's been a bit of a while, and I was amazed at all the impeccably dressed people just taking pictures of themselves. And I just thought, well, I'm so glad there weren't cameras when I was in my heyday, so to speak, because those pictures, we were not looking impeccable, and there was a lot of drunkenness and a lot of rowdiness. And it's taken almost the fun and the impulsiveness out of being in public, because you can't be positive and fun and free if everything is to be documented. It's no coincidence that the biggest growing industries in the world at the moment are fast fashion and makeup. Because we are now obsessed with how we look and documenting our life in a way that we feel like we need to be dressed up and made up for.
We've got to be camera ready, haven't we, at all times?
We are celebrating the growth of brands like Boohoo and Glossier and Kim Kardashian makeup brands. These are built on vanity. These are built on the vanity of young people who are trying to emulate a life that will actually serve them no purpose whatsoever. When I was a kid, I didn't have lots of clothes. I didn't wear makeup until I went to university, actually. And that wasn't unique for me, you know. And yeah, I feel like there's a loss there, actually. There's a loss in, you know, I feel sad there are 14-year-olds who won't leave the house without makeup. That's really sad. you've got 14-year-old skin. What are you doing? And sustainably, there's the conversation we had about what these products do. They're not sustainable products for a planet that we're supposed to care about. But yeah, that's you know, it's capitalism. If it makes money, it will thrive. And that becomes the priority. And that's, again, I said the word sad a lot in this podcast. Everything's really sad. But yeah, like I said, all I can do is think about how I introduce my child to it. And, you know, she might grow up to be exactly like everyone else. And like, because that's what kids do. They grow up, they don't like rejection. They want to be like their friends. And I'll do that because that's important too.
So in terms of filming everything, when you were doing your live stand-up before lockdown, what was your relationship with your audience and phones? Because I've spoken to singers in the past who've said, you know, when I did a concert 10 years ago, I wasn't just looking at a load of little glass screens, and now I do because everyone holds their phone up. Does that happen in stand-up, or do people not dare to do that in stand-up?
It doesn't happen as much. Part of the social contract in stand-up is what happens in the club stays in the club. So people who film, we will tell you to stop filming, especially for example, if I'm doing a new material night where I'm working on new stuff, because don't forget, as comedians, we create our art in public.
Yeah.
So if I'm creating my art, it's not ready yet. Why are you filming it? So on a night like that, I'll also put your phone away. Yeah, people have filmed me whilst I've been performing, and I only intervene if the material is new or untested. I would say it's a thing that affects singers more than us as comics. But you'll notice, like, the big superstar comedians, like the Dave Chappelle's and the Chris Rock's, you'll have to put your phone, you have to check your phone in or arrive at the venue without your phone, because they're so, you know, it's their intellectual property you're filming. They will make DVDs and sell DVDs and make millions off of them, so they can't have people film them on stage. So there's a conversation about that in the comedy world, because it infringes on our way to make, on our ability to make money. If people have recordings of us doing work, you're supposed to pay to see.
It comes back to what we were saying at the beginning, actually, right at the beginning, about if you want to support comedy and comedians, that's actually something that you shouldn't be doing. You shouldn't be filming them, because it is their intellectual property and it's how they make money.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, some people will end up doing like a snap or an Instagram story, and that I can kind of deal with. But when people are just like filming your whole bit, it's like, come on, guys, nah.
So I've got three questions I always ask everyone at the end, Athena. So if you've got a message that you'd like to give to everyone listening to this podcast, we've talked a bit about our social media habits and our, you know, politics and social media. What's the one message you'd like everyone to think about their tech habits?
Oh, the biggest message is it's not real. You know, what happens online isn't real. And so you have to take your head out of it frequently and measure the temperature of what's happening online against the temperature of what's happening in real life. Because especially politically, we're at a stage in society where it feels like we can either go one way or the other way. And it started to feel like it was going in a good way, and now it starts to feel like we're going backwards again. And so we can't take what happens online for granted. So whatever you're doing online, whatever you believe in online, please make sure that something is happening in real life that you have ownership of, that reflects that belief, if that makes sense.
I think that's such a brilliant way of putting it, the whole taking the temperature. Because I think, you know, we all talk about thinking it's not real, but then what do you do about it? But if you're, what you're saying is constantly sense check what's happening online to what's happening in the real world, and yeah, and see the difference. Yeah, I think that's really important. And have you got a tip? What do you do to try and get a good balance? You said you live on Twitter and your phone keeps running out. So
genuinely true. So a couple of days ago, I was just like, I was going mad. I found a Chrome add-in called BlockSite, and I'm sure whatever browser you use, there'll be an add-on for it, and it's called BlockSite. And you type in the websites you don't want to visit, and it basically means, and you type in the hours, so between a set amount of time, between set hours and certain days, I can't access certain sites. So I put in Twitter, obviously, but I also put in the FT and Guardian, because I read a lot of that kind of stuff too during the day, and that's helped a lot. So
brilliant.
You know, you can buy, it hadn't occurred to me, and it's so obvious, there are apps that stop you from accessing sites, and they remind you, and you could put in your own little message like stop or what are you doing. find some kind of app or add-on that prevents you from accessing sites. And it's productivity at the end of the day, it's all about productivity.
It's the equivalent, isn't it, of sticking a note on the fridge that says you really don't want to eat this, or
yes, absolutely.
Which I remember doing, yes. And finally, what have you learned about yourself from your relationship with tech and the digital world over the, you know, years that you've used it, or maybe just from lockdown? I don't know.
It's a bit corny, but that I care, and that's a good thing, but caring isn't enough. So I've always said I'm a terrible activist, because activists put their bodies on the line, and I've never really done that. I've kind of just, I try and be as well informed as I can be, and I try and talk and write about important things, and I try and open my wallet where I can. But I care more than the way I live my life shows. So I'm just trying to be a more progressive person in the real world. And social media has definitely taught me that about myself.
Oh, I've really, really loved chatting to you, Athena. How can people find you? Tell me. Give me all your handles and how they can find you if they want to find your live comedy.
Not between the hours of 11 and 5. I'm not on Twitter. I've blocked it off my browser.
Because you've blocked it.
But I am on Twitter normally, and it's my name, and I'm on Instagram, and it's my name. And I'm on Facebook, but I neglect it, but I'm on Facebook. But through those three mechanisms, you can get at me and say hi if you want.
Cool. And I'm going to put those links in the notes for the podcast episode as well. And if people want to see your live comedy, are there links on your website?
As if there's been no links there since lockdown. I'm not, but I need to. But yeah.
I meant your screen base. Sorry, your screen stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I tend to promote all my online gigs. I just tend to promote on my social media feeds.
Okay.
You just hop, you know, pop in, so see my social media stuff every now and again. You'll see where I'm performing.
Well, thank you so much. It's been brilliant.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us, and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.